Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we start the podcast, please subscribe to these. I'd love it forever. Also, I started like a community on Discord. If you hit the link in the description, it will take you over there, put in your details, and then it will send you a link to the Discord. We talk about podcasts on there as well. There's a few more discussions about the podcasts, and there's always a bunch of stuff. I give away music and merch and everything like that. It's just like the one-stop shop of everything to do with what I do. So if you want to go join, hit the link in the description, and you can go ahead. So anyway, podcast time, and this week I have the one and only Laura on. I've known Laura for a very long time. Before she was actually under this artist name as Laura, she used to be under an artist called Femme. She did collaborations with Justin Martin, which is how I know her. She was on the Hello Clouds album, and I loved her voice on there. And I knew she was a producer, and we did a session together. Absolute lovely person, and a very talented artist, producer, singer, songwriter. She started Laura Project, I don't fully know, but I think a few years ago, and it's very UK garage, dance floor kind of focused, and all the music that she's writing is absolutely amazing. She did some collaborations with Bronson, which is Odessa side project, and also Ben Bomber, and she has a lot of originals that are all really fucking good. So I wanted to get her on the podcast, talk about it, catch up, and just have a good chinwag. So without further ado, Laura, I was thinking about this on at the gym this morning. Like, I haven't seen you since I came to your studio in London, and I think are you in the same studio?
No, I don't even live in London anymore. I live in Battle. I think I've actually moved house twice since that session.
When was that? Was that like 2018?
I think it was even before that.
I think it was as well.
Because it was the house before I left London, like the one before the one I left London in, if you see what I mean. So it was a while ago, and we had that studio in the shed.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah. And I think I was with my first manager, which...
It could have been like 2016, maybe.
I think it was. Wow. Fuck me.
It was around when Justin Martin's album came out that I would vocal in, because I think that's why we got put in touch with each other, wasn't it? So it was, must have been 2016. I think that came out in 2016. So
which one was that? Clouds.
Hello Clouds.
Hello Clouds, yeah.
It was around then, I think.
Jesus Christ. What has happened in the last five years? How long? When was 2016?
It's a long time ago.
7 years.
What's happened? I don't know what's happened. I'm still making music. I'm still here.
We're still trying, at least.
For better or worse, I'm still here. I mean, what has happened? I became a parent.
I was going to say, you've got a child now, right?
Yeah, that was a recent-ish development, last couple of years. So,
was that a COVID thing?
Well, I guess 2021, kind of post-COVID, post-move out of London. It was like one of those, definitely COVID was that kind of pause in just looking at your life and being like, all right, well, if this is music on pause for a minute, like what does the next 10 years look like? You know, what do I want that to look like? Because I think previous to that kind of pause that was enforced on us all, it was like, I just didn't even look further than like 3 weeks into the future. You know, I was just making tunes and I was traveling a lot and that was it. And then suddenly that all kind of disappeared. And I was like, oh, okay, well, what do I want the next kind of 10, 20 years to look like? Is there small people in that or is it just us? I don't know. So
was that like a tough, like, decision to make? Because I think, let's be honest, like, we're, as musicians, we have to be selfish to a certain extent, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was, I massively underestimated how conditioned I'd been to think so, like, just always of myself in some ways, you know, because I've just been doing this music thing for so long in different projects or whatever. But, you know, I've been making music professionally for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, you're always thinking, you know, kind of selfishly, like you say, but like, there's always like, okay, well, what's my angle in it? You know, like, you know, what's this?
Yeah.
You know, you are, you just have to. And especially with social media and stuff, you're always thinking about how you're presenting yourself to everyone. And then suddenly you can't become a parent and just none of that matters at all. It's just all about this person, kind of bringing them up the best you can. And you just disappear out of the window for a while. I feel like I'm just now, he's coming up two at the end of the summer, and I'm like, I'm just coming back to my full power, but it's taken about 2 years. So I just kind of like, you just don't think of yourself for a long time, you know, you're just kind of consumed in this other world, and it's quite far away from music world.
But does that help? Because I think, like, I've got friends that have had, there's like two things that usually happen, where it's like somebody has a child and in music, and it like really refocuses them when they come back to it, and it's like, okay, game on. Or it's like, you know what, like, all of this music stuff doesn't really fucking matter, and I'm just going to do it for fun and just crack on with life. Like, how has it kind of turned you?
I think it's a bit of both in some ways. Like, coming back to the social media side of my artist project has been like, like, that feels so much less important to me than it did used to. But mainly just because I used to have more time to do it really, really well.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm like, if I manage to, you know, get up and get some makeup on my face in the morning and get an outfit on that I kind of like, I'm like,
winning.
Great. Fantastic. Never mind taking a load of photos, taking a load of videos, reels, whatever. It's like, oh, Jesus. You don't have as much time to be able to kind of really focus on that stuff. So that's been quite a slog getting back to that. But other than that, it's more fun. You do have less creative time. I still have my studio. I'm still in here every day, but the days are a lot shorter. I've just had to learn a different way of working, basically making decisions a lot quicker. Making decisions and sticking with them and not, you know, kind of like mulling over them again. And you know, like how it gets when you're making music, you just be like, just keep, you know, version 25, version 25.6, there's slightly different hi-hat, you know, and I've become a lot less precious about that stuff. And I also think it helps that I've kind of hit my stride in terms of sound, really. You know, I've been able to kind of hone that previous to when he arrived. So I kind of had a sonic kind of template in my own kind of production to work from, which I think has really helped. There hasn't been a lot of kind of discovery going on again. It's like, okay, let's just get back to it, you know. And it's developed, my sound's developed a little bit in this new stuff I've been making, but it's still very much kind of on the same tip that I was doing before he arrived. So
going back to that social media thing though, have you like, I'm trying to like get to the bottom of this in my own career and life, and how much social media is actually that, is it that important for like in situations like us, like, yeah, we're not the biggest artists in the world, but we have like an established fan base and a foundation in the music industry. Like, how important is social media in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's probably realistic terms, in terms of like value added to my business, I'm not sure it's as important as it was when I was kind of building it up, maybe.
I agree, yeah.
You know, when I was kind of building a story and introducing myself to people, you know, because, I mean, I've been a lot less visible online the last couple of years, but I've earned more money than ever in terms of my business. You know, I'm working a lot. I think that's just come from being in the industry a long time and starting to, like, know your worth a lot more. And I don't know why that's happened, but it has. You know, I'm looking... just did my accounts recently and I was I was really surprised. I was like, wow, okay, that's, I would have expected, you know, business wise to take more of a hit and post kind of being less visible online, doing less social media, but that actually hasn't been the case. But the pressure, Jesus, the kind of the FOMO of being constantly on Instagram and seeing everybody on tour always and playing the best shows ever all the time. And then being in this, you know, that definitely, you, the pressure you end up putting on yourself to kind of keep up with that is very real. I don't know if you feel the same.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that's like more of like a mental, a personal mental thing, which is kind of my argument of like, is social media like on a business sense, and I'm talking like business sense and a mental sense, is like, is it actually like, valuable, in is the payoff for like your mental, does it compare, does it like, is it worth the mental stress to the actual financial gain? Because there's like certain things where like there's certain territories I know I can post about, and because of my followers, most of my followers are in a certain region, it will make a difference on sales, ticket sales. If I post about a record, does that benefit? Does that get radio plays? No. Does that get Spotify streams? No. Does that get Apple streams? No. Does it mean that people go and buy on Beatport? No. So I'm like, what am I trying to do? If you know what I mean. And I think also like for me, I played a show this weekend, just got in Barcelona. And like, hands down, it was one of the best shows I've played in a very, very long time. And I played a lot of shows recently. But still, like on social media, like every show is the best show of my life.
Yeah.
And it's not. Like, we have to be realistic with each other. It's like, we could still be playing in front of thousands of people or even hundreds of people, or tens of thousands of people, but it still could not be that fun for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, not every, I mean, you can't better yourself every single show, can you, either? Like, you know, it's, you know, it's you're not in complete control of it all the time. But unfortunately, this kind of the social framing of it all has this chokehold on everybody to feel like they need to paint this picture of it being like, everything's kind of on steroids all the time. But I do think cracks are beginning to show and people are starting to be more vocal about kind of the fatigue of it all.
Yeah.
So I feel like post-COVID, it has been like ramped up massively, especially on the kind of from the live electronic scene and stuff, like just the amount of video footage of shows. You feel like you've been there. You know, I feel like I've been there. I feel like I've been out this weekend, haven't left Battle, but you know, I've seen like so much footage of everybody's shows on Monday morning. I'm like, oh, what a great weekend. It's great. I haven't had to leave. So it's, I don't know, I guess it's just, it's like, do you just decide not to do it? Or it takes a lot of mental strength not to feel that pressure. I don't know. I mean, it is taking its toll on people, I think, from what I can gather from having spoken to other artists and things. Everyone kind of feels the same. We're just this relentless need to film every single second of every single day. And it's not always that interesting, is it? like my day is not that, you know, sometimes that interesting. I sit here for 6 hours working on one little drum loop and it's like not that interesting to film, and that might be all I achieve that day.
Twiddling knobs all day long, sat on our phone, scrolling on Instagram. We have a great life, like we're super fortunate, but there's certain things that, like, I think the virability is, even if that's a fucking word, I don't know, I just made that up, but like the opportunity to have something go viral and it completely change your life, I think that's what a lot of people are going for.
Chasing, yeah, but that's quite different content to just making tunes that are gonna, you know, last the test of time, right? Like, I think ultimately most producers, musicians want to make music that they're not going to be embarrassed by in kind of 5, 10, 15 years time. That's, you know, tends to be my, you know, that's what I like to do. I like to make good music. I like to work with good people, and but ultimately those songs aren't necessarily the ones that are going to catch all the attention online, you know. It's we're in like the kind of cheesy bootleg era right now, but every time I see one of those kind of repurposed old 90s pop songs on a kind of garage or speed garage beat, it's like, it's, you know, it pops up, but it's not necessarily music you're going to be listening to in 5 years, even 3 weeks time, you know. So it's quite a different skill, I think, making content for like viral, potentially viral content, to like the day to day of actually making music that, you know, you play out or you want to listen to, or you want to make albums of and stuff. It's very different. And actually, I think a lot of the social channels don't really lend themselves to musicians' content, really.
Weird. I was actually, again, in the gym this morning, and there was a new record that sampled Bittersweet Symphony. And I was like, there was like a moment where I got off the Stairmaster and was like, why the fuck is everyone just using amazing records and not, like, the song that they sang on the sample is fucking awful. Like, why don't you just go get better at making music than go into be really lazy? Because, like, I get sampling. I love sample. I sample all the time. But for me, sampling is like finding something, unless you're doing a bootleg for, like, your sets. Like, it's like finding a sample that nobody knows and then make it into something that's really special. Not like, oh, go find the biggest hit of the early 2000s that everybody knows and then sing a really shit song over it with your average voice.
And just put like a house beat underneath it. Yeah. That's it. Everything else is the same.
It's just like, what, like, I understand what you're trying to do. You're trying to gain fame very quickly.
Yeah.
But like, does that, is there longevity in that? Is that building foundations? Like, where does that come from?
I don't know, but it gets attention quickly. And I think ultimately in this kind of age of short attention spans and information and just lots of content being fed to you all the time, like that, it's a quick and easy win, isn't it? So, but it kind of leaves the people like us trying to make original music out in the cold a little bit, or just it's a lot harder. It's a lot harder to break through, isn't it, with an original piece of music now. Whereas if you just, say, take a sample from a big well-known tune, repackage it somehow, it's more likely to get attention quickly.
I think it's also like, though, really, like, it's really false advertising for new artists that come on the scene. Because I think, like, let's say, for instance, I don't know if you know that Ajak bootleg that he did, or she, I don't know, he or she, don't know who it is. It was the Pond Replay, like Rihanna thing, like massive, like techno, like, or whatever it was. I think that like blew up on SoundCloud, then got massive, then got like upstreamed by a major and did okay, like stream. I think it did like a couple of million, but then like, that's your first ever record and it's a sample of Rihanna. And it's like, there's no like coming back from that. There's no like, that's all you're known for, really.
Yeah, where do you can't, yeah, there's not that kind of the sense of satisfaction. And you know, your first tune doing so many streams and then your next one bigger, that kind of. But I actually think a new artist, you need to see that progression. I mean, I've never had that experience of like, yes, so putting your first tune out and it being your biggest tune you've ever made, that must actually be really,
really, really scary. Yeah. And like, it's not me talking shit. Like, I spoke to Shaq. I had Shaq on here, and his first record that he ever released was that like Kim English record. Yeah. Just like that, like, got into the top 40 and it's your first ever record, and like, it's all opinionated whether you like it or whether you don't like it. It's up to you. That's why I love music. But like, the pressure, and like LF System,
like, where do you go from there?
Where do you go? Like, it must be tough. And like, when I spoke to them all, like, they say there isn't any pressure, but I don't know if I believe them. Because the pressure, we have pressure. I don't know, but do you have pressure? Do you put pressure on yourself?
In terms of the music, not as much, weirdly. I think because I've grown to feel like that so much of a track's success can come down to so many other factors that you're usually not entirely in control of yourself. You know, it can be team, label, timing, you know, and I make music as best as I can. I get it mixed as best as I can. I get it mastered. I approve that master and I go, this is, you know, how I am presenting this piece of music as a finished piece of music. But actually, like, then where it goes from there, so many different things are at play.
Yeah.
And it can be what I can believe to be one of my better tracks and it doing nothing. And then, you know, some track that I just kind of felt like it wasn't that my best tune will do numbers, you know? So it's like, and it just kind of, sometimes it doesn't always come down to you. So I guess I've kind of made peace with that a little bit. So I don't put too much pressure on myself in terms of trying to make my best track ever or whatever. I still kind of really enjoy just making the tunes for the sake of the music, you know, making those decisions. And I guess one of the things, this Laura project, when I started it, I was really keen for me to be able to open up to more collaboration with other vocalists.
Yeah.
Because up until that point, I'd always sung on my own records. I'd sung on other people's dance records and stuff. And I just wanted to take that pressure off myself in terms of me vocaling all my own records, because that is quite... it becomes quite personal then if you're always making all the music as well and you're vocaling it and you write all the lyrics. It's like, I just wanted a bit of relief from that for a while. I was like, just give me, work with some rappers who come in and give me their like best chops and I'll just smash them over this fat beat. And it just feels a lot more fun to me. It wasn't as heavy, you know, so I had to do that for a while. My next tune that I've got coming out, I am actually vocaling and I feel weird about it for some reason, but let's see how it goes though.
Why do you feel weird about it?
I guess because I feel like I get the last few years I've been kind of building up that, you know, housey with some garage influences with like really fat, heavy bass line, you know, and usually with a vocalist or some kind of chopped up vocal on top of it. And this one is very much stepping back into more of a, it's not a song, but when I sing on stuff, I can't help, you know, because I have one of those voices. It's a lighter voice. It's a lighter record.
Yeah.
Put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah,
so I was like, I kind of set myself the challenge at the beginning of this year. I was like, I want to, because I've had some success obviously with that Odessa/Bronson tune of me vocaling it and another one by Ben Boma. You know, they're a couple of the biggest tunes that I've sung on in the last couple of years. And this kind of gap was forming in my catalogue of like my really heavy bassy house stuff without my vocals on. And then like this other kind of more
ethereal,
you know, melodic. Deep house, electronic kind of thing, or whatever. And it was like, okay, how do I bridge these two worlds? Because a lot of people actually, they hear them on very different playlists.
Yeah.
They hear them in very different situations, and maybe don't make the connection that it's me working on both those both those worlds. So, beginning of this year, I was like, right, I'm going to try and make a single of my own that I've produced with my own singing on it, and it's good, it's fine. I've grown to love it, but I was really unsure about it for ages because I'm so much more invested in it.
Yeah,
you know, you'll just be more hurt. Like if people actually don't like it, you'll be like, oh, it hurts a bit more when it's like you're personally kind of singing on it or something. I don't know why.
What's your measurement on whether people like it or not, though?
I guess it's whether, actually probably a lot of it comes down to like a small circle of friends, whether they're like embarrassed to play it or not.
That's cool,
you know, if I hear other people sharing it or like some friends of mine that aren't you know, involved in music or whatever, but they're like enjoying it and they're sharing it and playing it and raving about it. I'm like, oh, that's good. That makes me feel good. Cause, you know, I don't really make the music with anyone in mind, really. I'm just kind of letting it lead a lot of the time. And with the philosophy of kind of trying to make banging tunes with as little melodic information as possible. Yeah. Which is probably why this next single of mine, I feel like I've betrayed myself, because there's quite a lot of melodic information in it. And I'm like, fuck, I just, you know, went back on my own philosophy there, but let's see.
I feel you though, because
I'll mix tune ever, and then I'll just eat all this that I've said and be like, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it could absolutely blow up and make millions off it, and then you'll just be laughing.
And I'll never make a song ever again.
Ever again. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's weird when you're right. When you make a record that's more melodic and more music, and it becomes more of a listening record than a tool, right? And it's listened to by different people, because you kind of take yourself out of that DJ world where like your DJ mates can play it and bang it out in a club. And then you're like, wow, I'm alienating my whole career, because this is what I've built my career on, is I'm a DJ. Like, I've got records myself that I can't play myself because they just don't fit my sets.
Sure.
And it's like, but I think that's the amazing thing of being able to write music, is that why should we just put ourselves in this box of like, I'm a DJ and I just make DJ music? I think there's like I think it's pretty unhealthy that we do that. And I don't know how you kind of overcome that, because I think it's also is how the streaming platforms see you, and how the radio DJs see you, and how everyone sees you is like, well, we're all DJs, so like there's like five playlists on Spotify that we can get involved with, like. And then if you go write something a little left, or you don't have the relationships with those Spotify playlisters, so you're like, well, we don't know who you are, so fuck off, you're not getting played. And then you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, it's I think I've read it somewhere online recently, like, you know, how the industry loves to, you know, put people in boxes because it works for the kind of infrastructure of, you know, the platforms and the labels and everything else and the audiences. But actually, you know, the artist, like, you don't fit in a box. You're always changing. Influences are always changing. You should be anyway. I've like, you know, developing and trying new things, I think. But ultimately, yeah, right now the kind of the channels into getting your music heard are quite narrow.
Yeah, very.
That's complex. Yeah, that's it's hard to break out of that. I guess one person I think has kind of broken down a few of those barriers would be Fred Again. Yeah. And Fortet, to an extent. You know, he's making kind of always making collaborations that you wouldn't have ever thought he would be making, you know, 10 years ago or something, or on his own solo records. So that's quite interesting. Like, I do feel like when you see artists like that breaking out and doing kind of multi-genre things across different different spaces, that's got to be good for everyone else.
Yeah, I think I honestly think there's quite a lot, but I think they don't necessarily start in the DJ world. To a set, they start as a band. They kind of like work into the electronic world and like dip their feet in occasionally. Yeah. Like even like Odessa, right? They're like some of the stuff they do, like. I loved their last album. It was fucking amazing. And realistically, is that a dance? Is that like a DJ album? It's not at all. But like Flume does some fucking crazy shit. Like. Unbelievable stuff. And is he a DJ? Then I technically he is. Disclosure. But I guess what Fred and Forte are doing at the moment is wild.
Yeah, like pretty far away from where Forte was a while back. But then he's like a creative personality, you know, like, and he's just interested in making stuff. And I think that's really, like, when I've met those people, there isn't any really boundaries to the art you make. You know, you just like making stuff with good people,
yeah,
or on your own or whatever, you know, and you just let whatever it is you're making lead, you know. I think that's when some of the most interesting art is made.
I think it's also about having the right team around you that actually support that and that, like, really understands the goal of what you're trying to do. Because I think it's like, it's very easy for us to go get an agent that just goes and sells you as a DJ and a manager that just wants you to make tech house bangers and be that person, right? It's very easy to have that. But then it's like really hard to find somebody that really believes in just putting out good music. Like, not every record Fortet puts out does well.
No.
Like, yeah. And he puts out ambient shit, like Floating Points, for example. Like,
yeah, some amazing, of his, yeah.
Like, beautiful music, like really beautiful music. But does everything do well? No, they just put music out because they want to put it out. And I love that concept.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I think that's really like inspiring and important. I mean, yeah, because I've seen Floating Points do like 6 hours of like a set that started in hip hop and ends up in like banging, yeah. You know, 150 techno. And it's just like, yeah, it's just amazing creators, I guess. And more of that would be good.
Yeah, I I think it's interesting and it's hard from where you start your foundation.
Yeah.
Because I think if you start in that I'm a DJ world, how does that kind of hold you back?
Yeah, or at least limit your kind of options a little bit, I suppose, once you get well known for making a certain or playing a certain type of set, yeah.
But I think with your stuff, it's like really interesting because I was listening to the mixtape volume one earlier and you've like created obviously over the years, you have a sound for yourself, but you've created this really interesting sound that is not necessarily, it's very dance floor, but it's also not.
It's not.
Which, how do you find that when it comes to performing live or even just like, you're like in between. It's very listenable as you're doing the dishes, which I love. Like, you can fucking walk around the house and listen and it's like, this is interesting music. And it can also be playable in a venue as well.
Yeah. I guess in terms of like live and touring and stuff, I've definitely found it difficult in, I don't know if it's just a territory thing, maybe the UK or what, but I don't feel like I fit onto a lot of the kind of lineups, you know? So I kind of have, I'm still kind of figuring that out really.
Yeah.
Because I do think sometimes in dance music and from what I've seen, it pays to be a little generic in some ways. Like, you know, because I guess you just get fit on more lineups. You can kind of fit into more spaces easily. People know what they're going to get. You know, you make a dance record that's slightly more, like, you know, I mash up a lot of different genres. It's at the core of what I've always done. You know, I grew up on kind of noughties pop music, you know, in the kind of Nelly Furtado, Timbaland era of pop music, you know, so all those influences bleed into the kind of melodies I make. And then garage stuff and garage influences, but say with a kind of slightly American kind of Chicago-y, jacket, house, kind of booty, ghetto house vibe to it as well, you know. So it's kind of a mashup of all different things. But radio love it, streaming love it, lineup, nah, promoters didn't love it really. It's quite difficult.
It's tough though, isn't it? Because it's like in this world, touring is how a lot of people finance their lives.
Yeah.
It's like pretty tough to make a very good living from producing music in the grand scheme of things.
It is, but I've always had like a large chunk of my business has been composition and production for sync stuff as well. Mm-hmm. And that is still the case. I do a lot of composition for that, and a lot of tracks, say that my tracks that have been released have been used in lots of different series on TV and Netflix and what have you. So, you know, and that starts to add up when you get a lot of them going on. And realistically, like, I don't want to be in three different countries every weekend. You know, I have a young son that I want to hang out with.
Totally.
And, so that's, I'm still finding that balance, really. Like, definitely I would like to be out playing more than I am currently. But, like, post-COVID and then having a kid and having basically a year off or, you know, 6 months or something off, it was, like, it's been definitely, like, kind of a struggle. Not a struggle, but, like, I'm only just getting back in my stride of kind of getting my head around what I want my touring life to look like, you know, because I think sometimes it feels a little all or nothing. It's like you're either out in the circuit and you're doing it, you know, you're doing three different cities every weekend.
Yeah.
Or you're not doing as much and you're doing kind of special one-off things. So I don't know. I'm still basically figuring that out after having had a long break. But let's see. Don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool situation, especially with the sync stuff. Like I'd love to like be able to have the ability to be like, no, I'm doing like half a year off touring and just like writing music and hanging with the family and hanging with friends, and then the second half do like really interesting cool shows that like earn a bit of cash, but like all the money's being made through music. It'd be fucking so cool.
Yeah, how do you find the touring schedule and stuff like post COVID? Do you feel like it's like more manic than ever, or how are you finding it after?
I love touring. I will tour every day of the week if I could as well. So it's like, I'm probably the wrong person to ask, because if I asked my manager, it would be like, yeah, just book shows in, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I've got in August, well, this is probably coming out in August, but I've got like 3 weeks off, 3 weekends off, which is like unheard of for me. I don't know what I'm gonna do with myself, although like it would be really nice to like have time off and spend time with family and things like that, but then I'm like, okay, let's fill up my whole time with studio and do that. But I like the travel. Last year I think we did like 80 odd shows, which was a lot. And
when you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
It's also that balance. It's for me, it's like, how much money do you earn compared to like, are you actually, how much of those shows are you actually enjoying? Like,
sure.
How much quality time are you actually having doing these shows? Or when does it just come that you're like just in the like the turntable of fucking playing touring shows and touring? I think that's a tough one, but I think also that this depends on the level of where you're at. And right now in my career, like, I'm very fortunate, but am I selling every show out and is every show a fucking stadium? No, if you know what I mean. And I think I think when the stresses of selling tickets, when, if that ever goes away, I don't know if it ever does, I don't know, but if that ever went away and it was like every show we could just go and have fun and not kind of worry about the lead up to it and then the aftermath of it and all of that, I think that would change the whole like dynamic of how I feel about touring.
Yeah,
I think there's sometimes it feels like a job, of course, but it's still the best fucking job in the world.
Well, yeah, exactly.
So yeah, like, just be honest, being honest really, it's like, it's not always that good. And like, also you have, like, we all have things going on in our personal lives that you can't take that to your gig.
No.
You have to switch things, whether you've got issues with your family, whether you've got issues with your relationships. The minute you get in that car to go to the venue, all of that has to go. And like, you have to be
the person that everyone wants you to be because they paid good money to see you. And you have to, if you don't commit, like, those people will never come and see you again.
Of course, you got to pull that energy out every time.
Yeah.
For that, yeah. That's yeah, I mean, it's quite, I mean, I was going to say athletic, but, like, it's pretty grueling to be out every weekend, you know, and doing, say, however many shows that you do. Like, it is exhausting, I can imagine, like, being on, and the travelling alone. You know, the shows are a buzz and you kind of get off the adrenaline, don't you? And you can do, probably play for hours and hours and hours just because you're running on adrenaline. But it's a bit in between where you're like, okay, you're travelling to the next bit, or, you know, little sleep, you're waiting around in an airport. Like, all that stuff is, like, that takes its toll, man.
I think for me, the thing that, like, and it's all completely my fault. It's, like, all self kind of bought on, but it's like I add more things to my schedule. So it's like, rather than taking days off, like, I'll come back and then I'll like book like 4 studio sessions, or like today I'm doing podcasts all day. And then like I add more things to do. I'm just a bit of a weirdo where I like to do more. So there does come a point where you're like, fuck, Will, just take a day off. But then you take a day off and you just feel lazy. So it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe she should have some kids, Will, and then it all gets made. Decisions gets made for you, trust me. Then you're like, I don't want to do fucking anything. I want to sit here and stare at a wall with a hot cup of tea and nobody fucking talks to me for a while.
Oh, maybe, but no. I've never really wanted kids, if I'm honest. Like, I love it. Love it when mates have them, and like my siblings have them. But yeah, I've just, it's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, you can handle it, though. I wasn't a particularly maternal person at all, to be honest. And it really was the pause of the pandemic that made me look at the future, really. Yeah. That was all it was. It was just like, okay. It really was that. It was like, okay, let's just have a look at what the next, however many years looks like, and what is the shape of that. Because I guess that, for that pandemic break for me, was just so like, I was like, Jesus, they just fucking stopped music. Like, it was... Like, in my wildest dreams, I couldn't have imagined that somebody would just be like, that's it now, no music for 2 years. It was like, what? I just couldn't get my head around it, you know, because when you're in the music career, you are just head down. So if you're not on the road, you're in the studio. If you're not in the studio, you're doing some kind of promo or photo shoots, or, you know, and I was also pre-pandemic doing a lot of like other bullshit eventy kind of influencer modeling stuff as well. And it was like, but just relentless, and you never get a chance to actually look beyond, you know, your kind of scheduled week or scheduled month or whatever. And it was like, holy shit, for somebody just to put the brakes on, well, the government to put the brakes on and be like, no, you're not doing that. Your whole career is just like on pause. I was just like, that was just wild to me. So I was like, maybe I should pour some of this energy into something else that can't be taken away. You know, I guess that was my thinking. I was like, maybe I should pour some of this energy that I have into, say, family and kind of nurturing something else that, you know, rather than, I think that sometimes with music, there's so little, we pour our energy into, say, social media platforms that we don't own.
Yep.
Like, we spend so much time stressing about content, you know, we put all our music up on streaming services that we don't own. They could be deleted tomorrow, you know, they could go bust and the whole thing goes down at a moment's notice, you know. And that, I guess the pandemic, that was kind of similar for me. I was like, whoa, like, it's just all been taken away from me. And hey, maybe I just need something else to do for a while. So that was it. That was my thinking.
No, it's a really humbling thought and conversation to have, because I think you're 100% right. We rely on everybody else in this industry, yet, and we look at everybody else as like they're the gatekeepers of, like, whether that's a social media platform, whether that's a radio producer, whether that's a radio DJ, whether that's a playlist person, whether that's whatever, yet they wouldn't have a job if we weren't there.
Yeah.
And like, we put so much power on all these people, but like, we are the people, why we're the reason why their platforms do well.
yeah, and exist and profit. You know, it's like, you know, music's never ever going to disappear. You know, around, you know, this bleeds into the kind of AI conversation that's going on right now. You know, it was like, oh, blah blah blah, it's all going to be AI music and blah blah blah. But regardless, even if it is all AI music, music is still going to be there.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Music, humans can't, I don't think, exist without music. The whole of society, you know, relies on music. You know, your restaurants rely on music. Everything, you know, all of kind of culture has music sewn into it somewhere. That's not going away. But so usually the artist is kind of bottom rung of the ladder, even though it's the thing that's kind of that these businesses are built on. It's a weird one.
Yeah, it's weird. It's really weird to think about when you have like somebody at Apple, somebody at Spotify that make reasonably good money from their job. And they're making more money than
you are.
Than 90% of the people on their platform in music.
Yeah.
Like, it just, when you think about it like that, it's fucked.
Yeah, it's proper nuts, isn't it? But then we're so deep in it, it's...
How do you come out of it?
So entrenched, yeah. I don't know. We're so deeply entrenched in it. One thing I've noticed recently...
My camera's been an absolute dickhead recently. It like keeps overheating. So now we're on the shit camera.
What was I gonna say? What I noticed recently, you know, the audiobooks and stuff that have gone up on I don't want to slag Spotify off because they're very good to me and like, you know, it's a good streaming platform, but it's like, weren't the audiobooks are like you can buy them? I'm like, well, why the bloody hell can't you buy an album on? You know, if they can set it up for audiobooks. Why can't you buy music?
But it's also like podcasts. Like I don't earn anything from this podcast on Spotify. They don't pay you for a stream.
Right.
If your record gets played on a podcast on Spotify, they don't pay you for your record being played.
Right.
So you could like, let's say for instance, you could get your record played on Joe Rogan's podcast that has 10, 20 million listens every episode.
Yeah.
And that doesn't equate to your streams.
It's all just a bit of a mess, isn't it?
Well, I think what it is you have the I think the issue is, and this isn't slagging off anyone, but I also don't care talking about the truth, is like you have tech companies making a music platform. It's not music heads making a music platform.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, I don't know if you've seen the Spotify documentary on Netflix.
I don't think I've watched it, no.
You should watch it.
Okay,
it's an eye opener, but it's very apparent that like how they value music and the value of what music is music should be free.
Right, that's wild. Shit.
Yeah, and
I'm going to change my career after this episode, Will. You know, I'm
sorry, just like, mate. Just have more kids, mate. Have more kids.
Oh, God. No, God, that's really tiring. No. everything I think of is more tiring than making music. You know, gardener, maybe. I like gardening. Oh, God, I don't know. God.
Yeah, what would you do?
What would I do? I'm fortunate that the last part-time job I ever worked in my early 20s was like in a vintage shop. And then I left when a customer threw a shoe at me because I wouldn't let them put a deposit down or something for like, you know, it was like a £5 pair of shoes. And like, can I pay this 50p a week? And I was like, it's not really how it works, you know. And that's not what my boss is going to let you do. So he threw a shoe at me. Yeah. And then I was like, you know what? It ain't worth it. This minimum wage job is not worth it. And so I left. Would I go back to working in retail? No, I don't know what I'd do because it's been so long. I've only ever thought, even when I was leaving school, I was like, I was interested in visual art. I was interested in music. I decided to do the music thing first. I thought, at the time, I was like, oh, there's an age expiry on a career in music, so I better get on with it.
Yeah.
I think it's slightly changed now, but at that time, I was like, there was definitely quite a lot of pressure, especially on women to like, you know, be a pop star by the time you're 25, otherwise your career's going nowhere.
Yeah.
And so I just decided to do music, but I've always been interested in visual art and, maybe I would have done something like that. Equally as difficult. You know, just I guess I've always just thought I'd work for myself, and I've managed to do that somehow.
It's the best feeling, though, isn't it?
Yeah, just being your own boss and never having to, you know, just being in control of your own destiny. I'm a big fan of that.
It's interesting though, because it's you're your own boss and everything, but everything you do is like, it's not like we have a product, although we do have a product, but it's not like you create a candle and then you put that in a shop and you sell it, and you know that like, if I sell 100 of these, this is what we're going to get. And that, I think that's the thing I don't struggle with. It just is like a very weird concept when you talk to like people outside of music. It's like, oh, you do this. What do you earn from that? Nothing.
Yeah.
You're doing this. Like, what do you earn from that? Nothing. Like, oh, you spend a year writing an album and it comes out. What have you earned from that?
Probably nothing.
$5,000 max. Like, what, like, and then you're like, what do we do it all? And then you're like, yeah, but nobody else would do any of this for nothing if they didn't absolutely fucking love it.
Yeah.
Or we're just absolute degenerates and can't do anything else. So this is all we can do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely pretty deep into it at this point. I was like, I better just crack on, even if I didn't want to do it. I do definitely have moments where I'm like, can I be bothered?
Yeah.
And that's usually spurred by the kind of the content thing that we're like the content yeah. We're in right now. Like, if I could just make tunes every day, go out occasionally, play some, you know, play a few shows a month or something, perfect. Like, that'd be great. But it's like, that's not enough. You know, it's the constantly having to churn out content that I find really fatiguing. And that's usually what starts getting me on that kind of negative thought of like, maybe I'll just pack this in a while, because you feel, oh my God, I've not posted anything on Instagram for 3 days. And everyone's like, you know, labels like, you need to post more, you need to do more TikToks. And you're like, oh, I just can't be bothered.
Yeah, the labels aren't posting every day. The labels aren't doing anything.
Yeah. And definitely I've got a few friends at the minute that are like less established artists, like still kind of breaking through, and, you know, they're looking to make their first label deals or whatever. Some of them majors, and a lot of the same stories, like basically everybody sits waiting around for your viral moment. Yeah. And that's the only reason why they don't get involved earlier in your career. It's like, you need to have, you know, a viral moment. And I'm like, bloody, like, I just can't, I don't put that pressure on myself, say, because I've earned enough money through other channels of my business that I've been able to establish for a long time. But as a new, if I was doing this now, like emerging into the scene with that kind of pressure to create a viral moment, it's like, that's got to influence the kind of music you're making, right?
Yeah, totally.
Has to.
Yeah.
Of course it will, which I think is wild. I mean, let's see, and, you know, studies will probably be made about it and the science behind it, but like, I wonder what people's mental health is going to be like, really.
I just think it's really depressing that labels, and we're talking major labels, like I think there's a lot of very, very good independent labels out there, and indie majors out there that do amazing jobs. But like, the biggest record labels in our industry that can really make and break a career is purely basing their signing and their A&R in off TikTok.
Yeah.
It's wild.
That basically, I'm pretty sure, like, I spent a little bit of time in it and I'm pretty sure I could feel my brain cells popping. I was like, I don't think this is good for me. I went down some, like, I mean, it's obviously not made for me, a woman in her like mid-30s, but it's also like, what is this? I didn't feel this was good for my brain or my kind of the little bit of attention span I had left. I saw it zapping away and bleeding out my ears. So,
well, I think it's also the reasoning, like obviously TikTok is a fucking amazing platform for people that like TikTok, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I've got friends that are chefs or like, and they've like completely changed their life on TikTok. Like,
that's cool.
And I think it's fucking cool. Like, earning hundreds of thousands of dollars, pounds, like purely because they use TikTok. But like, I think, you like, for music, we make music, we don't make TikToks.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's like you're trying to be a nut. It's almost like me trying to be like, I don't know, like a classical pianist. It's like, I'm not. So why would I try and be that? Like, if I wanted to be that, I'd have to like give up everything and dedicate my life for the next 5 years to learn the piano and do that. It's like, we're not necessarily all there to create viral content. And if you do create viral content, your art is changing based on what you're creating.
Yeah. Yeah. And say, I know, discredit to the people that are good at doing that, it's a very different skill. And also it's time consuming. That's why I try and explain to people. It's like, to be really good at a platform like TikTok or even Instagram, you know, like, it takes a lot of time. You have to invest a lot of time into doing that stuff well, and thinking about it constantly, and, you know, your different ideas for it. And it's like, realistically, if you are, fair enough, if someone else is making your tunes and you can just stick your name on it and be out on the road and make these things, great. But like, for people, self-producing artists that are also under pressure to deliver tracks and keep, you know, a track coming out every 6 weeks or whatever, and a reel three times a week, and also go and, you know, play at least once a week or two, three times a week, it's like, you only have a finite amount of time in your life, and you absolutely can't do it all. I've kind of made peace with that, for better or worse.
I really respect that though, and I wish a lot of other artists, and I think a lot of artists are going that way, but I really hope the whole industry kind of switches for that, because it's just not healthy at all.
No,
it's not healthy. What was the story behind doing the mixtape?
It goes back a time, but I guess I'd always had one foot, like, and one eye on dance music, you know, because of my collaboration. So when I was doing Ultra Ista with Nigel Godrich and Joey Warrenker, that we had a Fortet remix. And I guess that was kind of what kicked things off for me in that kind of scene, was seeing that Fortet remix. That was way back in 2012. Being played in these DJ sets and to people, you know, to thousands of people. And I was like, well, that's interesting, because I've never seen my voice used in that context.
Yeah.
But then, as a kind of reaction to being in Ultra Ista for years and being kind of, you know, obviously Nigel produced it, and he's an incredible, incredible producer. But like, after that project, I really just wanted to be my own producer and just kind of make my own decisions for a while and not have to do that kind of band compromise thing that you do have to do in band. So then I did the Femme thing, which was like a kind of ultimate reaction to being in a very cool electronica art rock band, or whatever the hell Ultra Ista was. And I just wanted to make like sugary pop records for a while. Did that, had a blast just like going out on tour with my friends and doing that. And then towards the end of that, I guess I kind of felt like I was reaching a ceiling in terms of touring, because the demands of, like, you know, we're selling enough tickets that the demands then of the production were getting so expensive for an independent. And I was completely independent. I released all the music independently and owned my own masters, which was great in business sense, but actually it put a lot of pressure on me in terms of getting the tour, like the live show on tour. It's just so damn expensive to get a pop show together. And I guess I kind of felt I was reaching a ceiling in terms of what I could do independently. And then in all that meantime, I'd done tracks with Christoph, I'd done stuff with Justin, some stuff with Sasha, and all these little tracks that were like bubbling away with my vocal on them. And I went to Miami Music Week, it was in 2018, I think I went 2018 and 2019, and saw Justin and Sasha and people playing these tunes. And I was like, it was just a real epiphany to me to see these people that like making tunes in their studio and then able to go and tour to thousands of people without the crap that I was having to kind of manage in the background for me to get my live show on tour. And I was like, that's really interesting to me. And also, more than that, it was seeing these DJs play tracks that obviously people have never heard a lot of the time, or, you know, weren't necessarily very familiar with, but like just seeing frequencies connect with people, move people, is in my producer brain. That was really intriguing to me, because I had always just been come through a kind of songwriting or indie career path where you write the song, you record the song, you rehearse the song, you take the songs out on tour. Yeah. People then have to the audience has to learn the songs, and then, you know, maybe next tour they'll sing them all back to you. You know, I don't know, that kind of thing. Whereas it was like, it was very intriguing for me to see like that instant kind of, you can make and bounce a tune and, you know, slap a limiter on it in your studio, play it in your set that evening and see how it reacts, and then take that song back into the studio. And that was just a very interesting, different way of working. And so it was kind of after that trip, 2018, that I started to think I wanted to step away from songwriting and step more into what the possibilities of, you know, of not using a songwriting structure and just starting to use my vocal as a sample. And then that just slowly developed. Then COVID hit, so I had way more time to write loads more music. And I kept going just further and further away from kind of the sound of Femme, if you like. And so I just kind of put that to bed and was like, got all this new music that doesn't sound like that. But I approached every track on the Volume 1 mixtape as an individual tune.
Yeah.
So I was really just, I didn't want to call it an album. I was like, because it wasn't thought of as an album. It was just every track was written individually over this, you know, I used to be able to make tracks really quickly, Will, not so much anymore. I used to be able to just bang out a couple of tracks a week, but thinking of them as just their individual pieces of music, you know, and usually with different collaborators on each one. And so there really wasn't like an album mentality behind it. I didn't really want to call it the mixtape, but label, you know what it's like. They want to put some title on something, some box, want to box it in some nice category. I would have just called it Volume 1, you know, of just singles, basically. So I guess I'm working towards Volume 2 now. And talking to a really exciting label that's like massive UK house label, basically, which would be a dream. If it comes through, it comes off. See, it's not signed yet, but if it all comes through, it's like it'll be a real like milestone for me in terms of like a partnering with a weightier label here. So that's exciting.
Are you changing the process of how you're doing, of how you're writing and making it?
A little bit. It's a little bit in terms of the process, probably not so much. You know, a lot of my process usually starts with, you know, a great, like just getting a great groove established, you know, a bass and a beat usually. It's the kind of foundation of every single track. And then filling it in from there. There's a lot more of my vocal on these tunes, but again, it's kind of sampled and processed in a weird way. Other than that one tune that I'm singing on, which is, you know. But other than that, it's a little bit more garage influence, you know, it's lighter, I suppose. Overall, in terms of feeling, but still very much that kind of me make wanting to make, see how minimal I can make these bangers, you know.
I like that a lot. It's a really interesting thing because it's having I was listening to your stuff today and it is very stripped back, which I love, but like I like the concept of like keeping it really minimal.
Yeah, like how much can you take out before it starts to fall over? You know, I just want to just be on that edge of it's like, oh, it's like, and also it's like, that's what I love about UK garage and a lot of UK dance music. It's like, it's usually a bit raw, a little bit, certainly kind of the stuff from, you know, 90s and 2000s. It's like, you know, and a little bit like all a bit janky and sometimes like in weird keys that shouldn't really go together. And I like that experimentality of kind of UK garage and bass music. And so there's definitely those influences in it.
Also how a lot of it was made was it was made on equipment that only allowed you to do a certain thing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, like, exactly. Limitations. Like I'm a massive believer in production limitations. Like some of the biggest producers I met with shit tons of gear, they never finish a track because it's just too many options. Whereas the people that are, you know, have one laptop, one USB controller and a set of headphones, like they make and complete more music than anyone I've ever met, you know? So I am in definitely a believer of restrictions in terms of little bit in terms of your gear, because you can just use it more creatively. If you know that that's all you've got to work with, it's like, okay, well, how do I make this better out of just these things that I have?
I've always wanted to do an album with like a drum machine and a synth and just literally do it all on one thing.
Yeah, that'd be wicked.
There's like a consistency of sound when you have limitations.
And I think it's that as an growing an identity as an artist, I think that is a really interesting way to do it. Like going back to Flume, for example, like he has a very specific sound.
Yeah.
Like even like the early MK days, it was a very specific sound. You knew that was an MK record. Like, and his new one that's come out, I don't know if you've heard it. Have you heard MK's new one with Sonny?
No, I haven't, no.
Just like brought me back to old MK days.
I haven't listened.
It was fucking, I texted him, I was like, mate, this is a banger. It just reminds me of those like days of like when MK was MK. And you're like,
yeah
I needed that. Need those days. Nice. Yeah, it's, I like, how do you, when you released the mixtape, I know you didn't want to call it mixtape, volume one, did it all come out at once?
Well, no, because a lot of those singles had already been released. So those singles already had their 6 weeks of shine or whatever each. And so the idea behind it was to just collect all those singles and put it on a physical record.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't have even put the whole collection on the digital streaming sites. Like my idea was that I wanted to just collect all those digital singles and press it all to a physical piece of vinyl that people could then just buy and have, and it'd be more exclusive like that. Unfortunately, I didn't win that argument, and the whole thing went up on digital services anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, in an ideal world, it would have just existed as a physical piece of vinyl as the kind of first collection of it. But you know, win some, lose some.
I guess we always just want to do cool shit, and the labels always want to make money.
Yeah. You know, and I like making money. I do. But yeah, I think everyone does a little bit.
Totally.
Sometimes I have to be told, no, you should probably do that as well.
Probably a good thing. I guess that's why we have managers and teams and everything like that.
Yeah.
What have you got planned for the rest of the summer?
What am I doing? I got a festival. I'm taking Kai to his first festival, and I'm playing at Latitude in Suffolk in a couple of weeks.
I've heard that's a really nice festival.
Yeah, it's really like, it is kind of, the festival that you'd want to take your family to or send your teenagers to for their first festival or something. It's easygoing. So we're going there, I'm playing there, and then I'm playing at E1 in August, which will be good. Got a few other little bits as well in between, a few little parties and stuff. And then got new music coming out in September. And a few collaborations on the go that should be, you know what they're like. They can take weeks to finish or years, literally years. So I don't know. I can't say. I have no idea when they might be finished, but there's quite a few things like that as well.
Are you doing stuff with Justin again?
Oh, man, I love Justin. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, we should do some more stuff together for sure. I've not spoken to him for a while. I think last time, we did a remix exchange. He did an amazing remix for me, and I did a remix of his song Let's. And so I'd love to do something with him again for sure. I just think he's such a brilliant producer in terms of just like really rare gem of positivity in his dance music.
Yeah, yeah.
But, it's really, like I say, it's unique. And those kind of producers that have those unique sonic identities, like I just really gravitate towards. And Justin's one of those producers where I feel like he just is making the music for him, and it's completely in his own lane, and I love that. It still moves thousands of people. When you see him play those tunes out, you're like, yes, they're positive and they're bouncy, and they're just like, it's very different to kind of the more serious tech house that some people can play.
No, I agree. I think he's a true artist. I think that's the difference. Is like, he has a sound and he sticks by it, and realistically, if you listen to his, he's evolved over the years. Also, like, kind of got a little more mellow over the years. But I think that's amazing. As people get older and priorities change and everything like that, it kind of changes your music as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, like, I love watching careers like Justin's and say, kind of comparable to Fortets and the Floating Points. Like, people that are self-producing artists, because you're not relying on anyone else for your A&R or anything. Yeah, there's some maybe label A&R along the way, but largely it's up to you to keep morphing and developing and sustain some kind of career, you know? And I just think that's just beautiful when you find artists that are doing, can just completely do that on their own. It's just fantastic. So,
I agree. Totally agree. Let's wrap this up. Thank you so much for coming on.
So good to see you.
Yeah, you too. It's been ages. We should actually get together.
It feels like, which is so nuts,
where are you now?
I'm in Battle.
Where the fuck is Battle?
Where is Battle? In it's near Hastings, down in East Sussex.
East Sussex. Is that near Brighton?
Yeah, about an hour away from Brighton. Between Brighton and Start of Kent, basically.
Okay.
So that's where I am, down there. Love it. Got a great spot, but the spot's so good that I basically never want to leave. And she's not so good for my social life.
It's nice being able to be in a place like that.
Yeah, it is wicked. Like, we love it down here. We got a lot of friends that moved out. There was kind of a mass exodus during the pandemic. I think it just hit our friends in a certain age, just at that moment. You're like, well, you either pretend you've got a few more years of, like, you know, the really hardcore city partying living in you, or you just admit defeat now and start the other bit a bit earlier. And a lot of our friends just, you know, moved out and settled a little bit.
Let me hit stop on this, and then we can talk after. 1 second. And that's a wrap. Big love to everybody that listened. Big love to Laura for coming on. Go check her music out. Go follow her on socials. Thanks for listening. Subscribe. Discord link is in the description. Love you lots. Keep safe.
What if you could have a career where the opportunities are as vast as our nation, where it's not about mission statements, but a shared mission? At U.S. Customs and Border Protection, we go beyond to protect more than borders. From ship to shore, air to ground, cities to local communities, CBP agents and officers are keeping people safe. Join U.S. Customs and Border Protection and go beyond for something far greater than yourself. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.